Last week we began the series entitled From Pillar to Post. 2 weeks ago. From Pillar to Post, the question of the modern day Aguna crisis. And this evening we're continuing in the section 2 of this series. The next one will be in 2 weeks from now. And today's topic, we're beginning an interesting question: can marriages be annulled? Now, there is some precedent. We always go back to Talmudic precedent for the nullification of marriages. However, the truth must be told that the only precedent we have explicitly for the nullification of a marriage is in a situation in which there is a blemish, which we'll see the details as we go, with respect to the woman. Man marries a woman, and something is very wrong with her. One of the examples is idleness, which means she's not mature. She's just, unfortunately, not developed. And he marries her, he doesn't know about it. And it turns out that she's not a full woman, if I may use that expression. And then the Gemara discusses the possibility that perhaps his marriage is a nullity, and therefore he never would have married her had he known that. And as a result, they're not married, no get must be given. This is a possibility. And there are other additional situations in which there may be a marriage annulled in such a circumstance. There is not a single place in the entirety of the Babylonian Talmud or the Mishnayos or other sources which discusses a corresponding shortcoming with respect to a man, that if the man has a shortcoming of whatever type, that the marriage is considered a nullity based on the fact that the woman would never have married the man, having known these circumstances. It's absence, not found anywhere in the Talmud. As a result, there is a body of halachic opinion which maintains that it doesn't exist. There's no possibility in the world of there ever being a marriage nullified if there's any shortcoming whatsoever with respect to the man. Now you'll ask, why? Mekaf tos, if you buy a house, or you buy a car, and it's missing a roof, or it's missing an engine, or something like that, you never would have bought it. So then we have the concept that the sale is invalid. Nowhere in the Talmud is the concept of mekaf tos found explicitly in any case in which there is a shortcoming with respect to a man. Not found. Of course, the question becomes, let's be fair. If we find explicit Talmudic precedent in the case of a shortcoming with respect to a woman, wouldn't it be logical to say that the same exact rule should apply to a case where there's an equivalent shortcoming with respect to a man? That's what I would have thought. As we shall see, this seems to be the consensus view. But it's, as I said to you last time in our opening shiur, the fact that there are varying opinions on either side should be brought into our discussion to understand that on occasion a view which is espoused by a particular rabbi, which is criticized from both sides, may actually be right. So here too, there are a number of gedolim who maintain that there's no possibility in the world to ever nullify a marriage, no matter how bad the shortcoming, how severe the flaw with respect to the man, there's simply no possibility to nullify the marriage. It is true, to go back to last week's year, that if there is a serious mum, a blemish, with respect to a man, so the classical works, such as the Beis Shmuel, says, Kofin oso lahotzi. You can force the man to give his wife a get in such a circumstance. Now, we spoke last week about the relative impossibility of applying that principle in our present society. But let's discuss at least theoretically. A man who is found to have a serious blemish, one can force him to divorce the wife. Now the question becomes, why is this so? Asks the Chazon Ish. He doesn't understand what is happening. If we say that the mum is so serious that they're not married, so they're not married, don't need a get, it's the best thing. If it's not that serious, and they are married, then on what basis are you forcing them to give a get? The question which the Chazal Nish raises against this opinion of the Beit Shmuel. In any event,
what was the first case? Is that like Tetsuah Daka or something like that?
We're not discussing that particular case. That doesn't come up yet. Perhaps we'll discuss it.
Is that something where he wouldn't be married?
Well, again, according to certain authorities, no matter how bad the shortcoming is, the marriage is a marriage. And even if it's a halachic prohibition, which we'll get to later on, is a halachic prohibition, it's hard for us to understand why it should be so. But it's found explicitly in the Talmud. The case is a couple gets married. He is a Kohen, for example, and she is a divorcee. Now you know, it says in the Torah, that a Kohen may not marry a divorcee. Right? Let's say that the Kohen marries her, thinking she is a single woman. She was never married before. It turns out she was a divorcee. I would say that's a slam dunk. There could be no more obvious case of a toast, of a mistake, which should nullify the marriage than this. That's what I would have said. But the Talmud teaches us differently. So we have to be, we don't create things which are not found in the Talmud as a rule. So therefore, we have to understand, I don't think we'll get to it tonight, why that is in fact so. Yes?
What about either man there?
Similarly. One of them is he or she has this terrible stigma which makes him or her prohibited to enter into the community of Israel, and it's kept from the other party. The presumption is that if they find out afterwards, despite the fact that they didn't know it at the time, the marriage is valid. Hard to understand why. Be patient. If we don't get to it tonight, we'll get to it later. Yes?
Infertility
is certainly a problem. There are two kinds of infertilities. Some are obvious upon a basic doctor's workup, and most infertilities are very not obvious. So even in the case where it's very obvious, it's not clear anywhere that would render the marriage to be invalid. We have the only source we have, as I said before, is islandess, and islandess is certainly infertile. It's infertile plus, right? She doesn't have the normal body of a woman. Okay. There we have, in the case of the woman having this blemish, and he didn't know about it, that perhaps the marriage is invalidated. Well, there's no corresponding source anywhere in the Talmud with respect to a man having a shortcoming in that area or any other area. It's not found. Not found. He's a man, he's a man. That's it, he's a man. For better or worse, he's a man. We don't find any precedent in the Talmud to nullify such a marriage. Why not? Well, first of all, the answer, well, maybe it's true. The fact that it doesn't say explicitly in the Talmud doesn't mean it's not true. We'll get to that shortly. But if not, as we say in our language, if not, why not? If not, why not? So, two sources are quoted in the Otzer HaPoskim, a compendium of various great works on matters of Evan HaEzer, marital law. And it's found, for those who want to look it up later, it is in Simon Lamed Tes, Sifkot Lamed Beis, Oz Tes Zayin. If you have the standard edition, it's on page Kuf Tes Simon Aleph. Two sources are quoted. One, I must tell you, I'm not sure who the author is. Just don't know. Something called the Urios Shlomo. I'm sure that there are those who can find out for me who the Urios Shlomo. There are some. Where are the rest of the sheets? Where are they? Where are the rest of them? They're probably in a pile somewhere? No more left? I apologize. I thought I made enough for everybody, but I guess I didn't. Okay, well, I'm going to need one for myself, so maybe I'll just borrow from one of you, because I don't... Oh, there's more than one here. There's three of them here. Okay, so... Okay, if you don't have your own, you can look it up. This is referred to in the next to the last line of what I just gave you. Okay? I wrote... This I wrote... What you have in front of you. Yesh cholkim bazeh v'sorim delo matzinu kidushei tos b'mum shebi'ish. This opinion is noted, duly noted, in my piece. It's only one page. We'll get the details as we go. Why? Why? So the Urios Shlomo, again, I do not know who wrote it. You can sure look it up when you get home on all these sites to find out who he was. Obviously, he's a great rabbi. He's being cited here in Eretz Poskim. Why? I quote you verbatim what he says, as it is in the compilation known as the Eretz Poskim. Explains as follows. He says that if this is true, it's itasa b'chol duhu nichala. A woman is satisfied with a man, even if he's not so great. Who said so? Slowly. Where is that Talmudic statement found? Ksubos ayin heyam and aleph. And what's the basis for it? Tav lemesav tandum lemesav armalu, which means the woman would rather be in a pair with a husband, even if the husband is not exactly so great. Still, she would want to be a woman married to a man than to be by herself. Now, perhaps next time we'll have an opportunity to spend some time on what I would consider to be a theological dispute. I'm not exaggerating. Between rabbis of 40 years ago, whether this chazaka, this assumption, is subject to change in the passage of time. Is this something which is for all times? Or perhaps it's purely society dependent and can change with time? This is going to be discussed, I don't think we're going to get to it tonight, just for your information. So this is number one. The more famous personality from where I come from, who said exactly the same thing, is quoted on the same page, Pirushei Ibra, by the great Posek of America, who was, when my father grew up, he was the Posek of America. He came from the Lower East Side. He's known as Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin's position as the Posek of the country was somewhat surpassed, if you will, by the immigration of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who we're going to quote shortly, the author of Igros Moshe, who came to this country, I believe, in 1936. But in the two decades before that, the first two decades of my father's life, he grew up in the Lower East Side, there was one person who was the final word. There were many other rabbis. That was Rav Henkin. And my father was close with his son, the late attorney Louis Henkin, who was an expert in international law. He taught in Columbia. My father's close friend and contemporary, and they would always be in touch, even later in life. So his father, that was the word, Rav Henkin. That was the last word, Rav Henkin. He was the final authority. He wrote, when we find a mum with respect to a man, lo matzinu b'gemara levatal hakidushin. Nowhere in the Babylonian Talmud is there such a precedent. Now, he knew the Talmud, like you know, what should I say, like you know, how to walk home. Okay, he knew the Talmud like the back of it. He knew the Talmud, and he couldn't find any precedent for it. Means it's not in the Talmud. You don't have to check your Bar Ilans. It's not there. It's just not there. It's not there. And he gives the reason as before, because the woman would be satisfied even with a lesser man. Why? B'chol du nichalahu tav lemesav tandem lemesav armu. This is the opinion of Rav Henkin, as well as when he was preceded by the author of Yiriel Shlomo. Good. So there are two gedolim who maintain that no matter how bad the blemish may be with respect to the man, it does not constitute ground sufficient for nullifying the marriage. That's his one opinion. However, as we mentioned last time, going back to our title, from pillar to post, the pillars are the great rabbis of the generations upon whom we rely, notwithstanding the fact that there are other rabbinical opinions. And now we start an entire series of citations here of great rabbis who believe that no, that even though the Talmud does not explicitly endorse such a position, namely, that with respect to a woman, she can have the marriage nullified on the grounds of a major shortcoming with respect to a man, you only find it the other way around. Nonetheless, it's equally true in the other direction. And some of them say it's even more true in the other direction. For an obvious reason. With respect to a man, there's not such a great need by Talmudic law to rule that the marriage is null. Because if he doesn't like the marriage, he can terminate it at any moment. by Torah and Talmudic law, a man can divorce his wife even against her will. So it's not so critical to have this option of nullifying marriage if the man marries an islandess. You're not happy? So give her a divorce. With respect to a woman who does not have that option, as we know all too well, she cannot initiate a divorce. Therefore, it's even more critical to give her an out, and perhaps even more logical to assume that the case of the woman who marries a man who has a major blemish or shortcoming, that we should nullify the marriage on the grounds, as you said before, Mekachtos, she never would have married him had she known about this particular shortcoming. I'm going to rattle off a list of some of the great rabbis within the last 150 years who adopted this position. The first, as cited in the order of this Otzer HaPoskim, is the Beis Halevi. And the Beis Halevi was my Rebbe's great-grandfather and namesake, of Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, of first of Voloshin, and then of Brisk. He was not known as a rabbi who rattled off leniencies all over the place. As a matter of fact, in the famous biographical work by Baruch Halevi Epstein, which was excerpted in part in something called My Uncle the Netziv, which is a banned book. The book was banned. In my house, it was read through so many times, it's ripped to shreds. When they banned the book, everyone had to read it once and twice and three times. We got it as a Stucker collection from Lakewood, and they sent us a letter, give it back, we'll give you your money back, this book is banned. So it was read many more times by my children as a result of that letter. They probably know it cold, some of them. Okay. In any event, in that book, it tells you that they came to the Beis Halevi and they said, you're known as such a tremendous machmir. You're strict about everything. And he said, to them, what are you talking about? I have so many leniencies. And he rattled off seven leniencies on the spot. They were all found in that book. I remember some of them. One of the leniencies was, for example, if you forget a day of Sfira, what the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to count another with a brach. I'm lenient. Continue to count with a brach and Sfira even though you've missed a day. Or I believe one of them may be, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to learn Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. I'm lenient. You can learn Torah then. And these kind of leniencies, he rattled off seven of them on the spot. But he wasn't known for leniencies as a general way that he decided these things. But he says no. By at least on the based on Torah law, even rabbinic law we'll get to perhaps later, on the Torah law basis, if a woman finds a blemish in a man, and she didn't know about it, and she says right away, I don't want any part of this guy, had I never would have married him, had I known this, it's called Kiddushei Tos, or Mekach Tos, and we can nullify the marriage. Beis Halevi. Okay? Who else says this? The ones that we're familiar with. Yad David. Yeah.
When you say nullify a marriage, you're saying that even if the husband says, I don't want to give you a divorce.
No need for a divorce.
No need for a divorce.
Marriage is a nullity.
Because otherwise...
No need for a divorce. Don't bother.
Is there a time frame?
There's no time frame. Let's say they got married, and 20 years later she discovered a fault which she didn't know about. Somehow he hid it for 20 years. That's pretty hard. But somehow she hid it for 20 years, despite the magnitude of the problem. And she finds out, and she says, I'm out of here, because I didn't notice for the last 20 years. I was an unlikely case. She probably noticed it in 20 seconds, or 20 minutes, or 20 days.
Let's say a genetic condition that took...
Genetic condition that may not rise to this level at all. Let's not discuss that. We're going to see soon what kind of things we're talking about. We have a totally different magnitude than the genetic condition. But let's go slow. Who is the Yad David? Most people in this room have never heard of the Yad David. The Yad David was the Rab David Friedman of Karlin. Rab Chaim Briska felt that he was the Gadol Hador in his time. Rab Chaim didn't give out compliments like this. Rab David of Karlin was considered the greatest rabbi of his time 100 years ago. Okay? He says exactly the same thing, that he says, any mum, he gives a generality, and this is important to know as we go forward, any mum that we paskin, that if this mum emerged, means developed, I should say, after the marriage, we force the man to divorce his wife, and there's a series of this list in the Mishnah. Let's review again. There's a set of conditions found in the Mishnah in Ksubas. If this condition or that condition or this condition emerges or is developed after the marriage, if it happened after the marriage, we cannot say it's Kiddushei Tos. It didn't exist at the time. We'll get to that as we go. But you force him to divorce her, reaches that level, then anyone that fits into that category, if it turns out that it's a pre-existing condition that she didn't know about, and she finds out later and she walks out, all of those cases, the marriage is null. This is Rav David al-Karnina. He made a whole categorization out of it. You can look it up. There's a Mishnah Ksubas. We'll see the Mishnah. A whole list of things that if this happens, and it happened after the marriage, you're forced into divorce her. Anything in that list, if it happened before the marriage and was kept from her, she didn't know about it, then the marriage is null and void.
What's her status? If she divorced you?
Let's no, she's a single woman.
So she can marry a Kohen.
She can marry a Kohen. That's correct. He does say, interestingly, in his protocol, it was impossible for her to know about it. What does that mean? If it was possible for her, where's the due diligence? She didn't do a due diligence. She doesn't care. If you cared enough about this particular shortcoming, you should have done your due diligence. You didn't do your due diligence. But you did your due diligence. It was kept a secret. There's no way you could have known about it.
How did you do the due diligence?
Patience. Every case is different. We'll see soon. Let's go slowly. What's an example which is given? Mukesh Shchin. That's found in the Mishnah. Mukesh Shchin. We know Shchin from the Aser Makas.
Boils.
The guy has boils, and it's physically dangerous to live with a man who has boils. That's what the post can assume that, based on the Gemara. And she didn't know about it. She couldn't. How did she know about it? She did a due diligence. She tried to find out. Her doctor was working with HIPAA. His doctor was muzzled by HIPAA. Couldn't say anything. So there was no way to find out. He was wearing clothes. That's the example he gives. Because Mukesh Shchin is one of those in the Mishnah you force him to divorce her. So Rav David al-Karnina says, if it was a Mukesh Shchin before the marriage, and how could she find out? He was wearing clothes. The doctor was HIPAA. No way to find out. Impossible. Due diligence couldn't have discovered anything. And if it turns out, afterwards he has it, and we find out later that he had it from before the marriage, and she didn't know about it, she walks out, she's not married. That's the example that is given. So you have now two giants of halacha, of the Lithuanian school, that's known as a strict construction of school, both of Yosef Dov Alevi Soloveitchik of Levoloshin and Brisk, and Rav David al-Karnina, that Yosef Dov's son of Chaim considered to be the Gadol Hador, the greatest of all the authorities of the day. Both agree, at least in principle, that there could be this concept of nullifying a marriage based on a significant shortcoming in the husband, which was unknown to her, which she could not discover, and she discovered and she walked out on him. The marriage is null. Yes, Chaim.
If it's true that this would dissolve the marriage, then the Mishnah might not need to be. Because the Mishnah is telling you that he has to go and give her divorce.
No. There it developed after the marriage. He didn't have any boils. They did a physical on her from top to bottom. And it was a pre-HIPAA. She had her doctor go check him out. There's no blemish at all. A year later, Nebuch, he comes down with Shchin. She says, I love you very much. I can't live with you. My doctor says, I'm going to get it from you. I'm going to die earlier. That's the case you're forced into divorce. But if it's a pre-existing condition, they're not married at all. That's the rule of Rav David al-Karnina, which is a very far-reaching rule. Yes, Moshe.
But the problem with Shchin is only that it's contagious, not that it's physically unattractive?
Very good question. It's a good question. We're not up to that really yet. The Gemara does seem to say that it can be... I don't know, I'm not a doctor. Is it contagious?
No, it could just be dispensing the
cause. Again, it could be... There is a concept in the Gemara that it could cause physical deterioration with respect to a mate of someone who has Shchin. That's what the Gemara says. I'm not an infectious disease, or if this is an infectious disease that boils, I don't know anything about it. But at least in the medicine of the Talmudic times. Perhaps, though, it's not even a necessary condition. The fact that his appearance is revolting to her may suffice. We'll get to it. I'll give another example, okay? Another example. Something which is called a burski. A burski is a tanner. What's wrong with a tanner? It's a noble profession. Well, the smell could be so overpowering that the woman says, I just can't go near this guy. Can't go near him. That could be grounds for compelling a divorce. Right? And therefore, if somebody was a brusky, I don't know how she didn't know it beforehand. In those days, they had long distance. Maybe they was only on Skype. So on Skype, he looks very good. You can't smell him on Skype. And all of a sudden, it turns out that whatever. I'm just giving examples that the Mishnah has of cases that are found in the Mishnah. Who agrees? I'll only mention two other names. One is the Maharsham. I mean, we mentioned it for a reason. The Maharsham was not from the Lithuanian school. He was from the Galician school. The Maharsham of Rav Sholem Mordechai Kohn of Berzhan. He was considered the greatest authority of his time in that part of the world. He was known as a Mekel, as someone who's very often lenient. His example was based on the Tshuva Rabbeinu Simcha. Now, again, talk about long-distance relationship. A man was blind, and she didn't know about it. How she married him, we call that now like Akasha Famaisa. But that's how it was in Europe in those days. An actual case came to Rabbeinu Simcha, who was one of the greatest members of Balei HaTosfos, and he says, she goes out without a get. See, Klor, the precedent does not just begin in the last 150 years. Rabbeinu Simcha lived, I'm trying to guess, 800 years ago, maybe even more, maybe 900 years ago. And he ruled already then that a significant, it's pretty significant, a significant blemish with respect to a man that the woman did not know about is sufficient for her to go out without a get. If she discovers this, I never agreed to this, it's a tos. It's a mekach tos. So it goes back already to, not quite to the Talmud, but to what we call the Rishonim, and even the early Rishonim is Rabbeinu Simcha, who said it, and the Maharsham uses as a precedent. And the fourth and final authority that we're so accustomed to in our country is Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein. He has a number of tshuvas, in which he maintains exactly the same position. And he talks about Mukashchin. That's how he starts talking. Okay? And you don't say, it's true, this is a fascinating play on words. We saw that there's an expression, Isha b'chol duhu nicha, that a woman is satisfied with anybody. He says, Rav Moshe, this guy's not even an anybody. He's a nobody. He's not even a kol duhu. That's, I'm reading the expression. He's not even a kol duhu. It's not, he can't, this guy is not, it's a mekach tos. Finished. It's a mekach tos. Of course, the question is, what examples can be given to reach this level? What exactly reaches this level? Rav Moshe subscribes to the same rule of thumb as the Adavid. Any shortcoming that is so serious that if it happens after the marriage, you can force him to give her a get. If it's a pre-existing condition unbeknownst to her, there's no need for a get. Again, assuming that she discovers it and says, it's not for me, and I want out. This is the opinion of these Gedolim. Now, I said before, there were at least two others who disagree with the whole concept. But we rely on those pillars. The pillars that we rely upon who have stated these conditions. Now, but let me give four cases of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe gave four specific cases of shortcomings, which he considered to be so, so severe that in his language, no one would want to marry such a man. Now, no one? That's a pretty powerful statement. Because we know women who've married men, despite knowledge of many, many significant shortcomings. He has four tshuvas on the topic. Four separate tshuvas, four different shortcomings. Two of them are found in the first volume, Igros Moshe Aleph, and two of them are found in the fourth volume, Igros Moshe Dalet. This Otzer HaPoskim was printed after Aleph before Dalet. They only give the examples that were given in the first volume of Igros Moshe. And there are two of them there. What are the two? Igros Moshe Chelek Aleph Simen Ayin Tes refers to a man who unfortunately is impotent. He's unable to have relations with a woman. Unable. And the doctor said it's impossible to cure him. Well, the doctor says impossible. He doesn't want to give a get. He's embarrassed. He ran away. Says Rabbi Moshe, this is the Iker HaIshus, as it says in the Talmud. Hakol Yodim Kala Loma Nichnasa L'Chuppah. Everyone knows why a kala goes to the chuppah to have relations with her husband. We don't like to talk about it. We try to be very tsanua, not talk about these kinds of matters. But we all know, we read in the parasha 2 weeks ago, if a woman is not given this opportunity. It's called inui, as it says, im ta'ane espinosai. Said by Lavan, Lavan Avinu, right? Lavan said it to his son-in-law Yaakov, you better take care of my daughters, and don't leave them without physical satisfaction. And that's considered to be inui, right? It's one of the inuyim of Yom Kippur. You have to separate for a day, okay? Pashit uboro, says Rabbi Moshe. Shem eino royal detachment shumum hayosegado. Tochosibo haiko shenises bishvilo. Ein tsarech klal araya, says that. It's so obvious. You don't have to prove it. It's obvious. But, despite that fact, I have a proof. What's the proof? If a man, let's say he's healthy, perfectly healthy, healthy, let's say they prove it, they're married, they have a child, everything's fine and dandy. Nebuch, a month later, he develops a serious illness, and he becomes completely impotent. Completely. No cure. Zero. And she says, you know, I love my husband dearly. I have a child with him. But I'm 22 years old, and I'm not going to have any possibility of any physical relationship for the next 100 years. I'm not willing to go through this. I can't handle it. I can't handle it. Maybe if I'd be a bigger today, because I could handle it. I can't handle it. You can force the man to divorce his wife. Going back to the rule we said earlier, if you can force the man to divorce his wife in a situation of a condition which arose subsequent to the marriage, if it's a pre-existing condition of which she is unaware, according to the rule of Yad David, and Rav Moshe subscribes to it, the marriage is a nullity. They are not married, and no get need be given. Oh. This is example number one. Okay? Everyone got it straight? Question? If you have a question, please feel free to raise your hand. Yes?
Let's say there was a pre-existing condition. She didn't know about it. She found out afterwards. At that point, she already had a child.
Doesn't make a difference. Doesn't matter. It could be theoretically 20 years later. Of course, it has to rise to the level. Obviously, the case that we had this now, if she had a child from this man, it couldn't be impotent from before the marriage. That's we know enough about that. We're not going to talk about these details, but that's clear. Okay, so what else can be? What else can be? There's only one other example found in the first five of a vigorous motion. One. That's the very next tshuva, which is Simen Pei. Simen Pei is what's referred to over here in this piece of paper. So let's take a look and read a little bit more. This is what I wrote. Let's read just those who have. You don't have, you look on with your neighbor. Are there enough to go around? I'd like to make sure that everyone has at least access to one.
What?
Yeah, what's the question?
We know probably today that this is not a rare condition. And if you ask doctors in the field, they would probably tell you, like, 10% or 20% of men have this condition.
What are you talking about? We have a doctor, he'll contradict you flat. Impossible. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very rare condition. Very rare. Okay, but you'll argue with the doctor later. Yes.
This occurs after they've got their minimum number of kids for pru or stuff like that.
Right.
So then he becomes impotent.
I'll tell you the following question. I'll give just to show how never say always. Okay? Just imagine the following situation. The second marriage, he's 80, she's 75. Okay? And they get married, and she comes the next day to Beis Din. Kiddushei Tos! The guy... yeah. I mean, you know...
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
No, that's what you're talking about. Ah, oh, come on. That's not how I understood you.
What I'm talking about is somebody who's 70 years old doesn't get divorced.
Chas v'sholom. Exactly. Because if she married him and she knew he was 80 years old and it turns out he's impotent, she said, I never would have gotten married. Hey, lady, something's wrong with you. You should have... Yeah. Okay, whatever. Let's go on. I have to have a few light moments. It's a very serious topic. Let's open to this. This I wrote this myself. B'dvar Ha'isha, with her initials, who was married to a man by that of his initials. They gave you the date of the marriage. B'nifrida mimenu kavur asara chadoshim. Amazing story. She separated him after 10 months. V'yolda beis chadoshim achakach. She was 7 months pregnant when she left him. Shows how bad it was. Mikema she'i'ev shal asig mimenu get. Can't get a get from the guy. Yeshlod and Mahoyu Kiddushei Tos. Vizos Biglal Shabal hayachol nefesh lefnei anisuin. He was unfortunately mentally ill before the marriage. Ukshenoda lo baruch hamimenu miyad. When she found out about this serious condition, she ran away. So I give the first citation. Igros Moshe, Chelek Aleph, Siman Pei. Pasak. Tim hoya chole b'machlas shtus. He was a shote. Ukagdoras shote mamish. What is the shote in the Talmud in Chagig at the beginning? Shaholach orum v'oven mamish. He walks around naked. V'ibid mashenosno, whatever you give me loses. Af im bishah oshen nisa. At the moment that he married her. Couldn't tell at the time. He wasn't naked under the chuppah. And he didn't lose anything under the chuppah. Mikol makom havi kiddushei tos. Why? The shtus, this status of shota, is a mum godol, is a serious blemish. She'eino royal le'ishus klal ayin shah. This man is not capable of a normal marriage. And therefore, a Moshe paskind in this kind of circumstance, that the marriage can be nullified. It's interesting, the exact same question that was sent to Rav Moshe Feinstein in America was sent to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was known as the authority in Yerushalayim, and he also passed in the same way on exactly the same case. You can see that they give you the details of when he was hospitalized, etc. It was in the Navy, a whole story. So it's obviously the same case. They sent it to two rabbis who both rendered lenient opinions that the marriage is null, and no get is required.
So what's the status of this child?
The child of a man and a woman who weren't married. Big deal. Kosher as kosher can be. If a man and a woman are not married, have a child. Child is 100% kosher.
It's not disability.
Okay. Now, yes?
Didn't you say 2 weeks ago that you sent a question to Rabbi Avadia's?
This is the one.
Yeah, but he, about mental disability.
This is the one.
But he said he was against it.
Patience. We're just trying to revisit the question. No answer, just this is a question. Yes, Rina.
Okay, so if the couple was not married, let's say they had a daughter.
Right.
Did the daughter marry a Kohen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go on. Umeata yesh la'ayin minida dida. We're going to discuss our question. Sheme olam hoyolo hoya shote gomur. He never rose to the level of someone who walks around naked, who loses whatever you give to him. Never was that way. Aval hoya chole nefesh chamur. He was seriously mentally ill. Ma'od kidla halon. As I explained. Aleph. Yesh michtav me'imol achiv bishnas tashna. That's 1995. That's 10 years before they got married. Shenisa la'abed atzmo ledas. He was suicidal. Aide lekichas kadurim. He took pills to kill himself. V'itzilu also. They pumped the stomach. Severe depression to the extent of being suicidal. That's one that we know. We have a letter attesting to that. Two, base. Yesh michtav psychiatrist, a psychiatrist, a female psychiatrist, nisua lebendodo, who was married to this fellow's cousin, shedivcha, they reported al sichasa on her conversation im habal with the husband. She's kind of lefnei anisuin. It was pre-existing before the marriage. Hu amar. I'm sorry to speak. I never like to talk this language. You never heard this from me, but we have no choice but to say what's said because this is in order to try to make the matter in aguna. We use language that we normally wouldn't use. Forgive me for writing it and for reading it to you. Shekiyem yachasim im isha mevulgeres mimenu. He had relations with a woman older than himself. Pshezen ifla, it's great. V'umargish, and he feels sorry. Kilubo al imo, as if he had a relationship with his mother. Hu amark, and he said so. Belasha nibul peh, haki garua, in the most profane and obscene way of saying it, and he didn't say it in private. Bifnei krovim zakenim, in front of older relatives. What is this a diagnosis of? Says she, the professional psychiatrist, Rak mi shesovel mi choli nefesh chamur ma'od. Only one who suffers from a very serious mental illness. What's it called? Borderline personality disorder in Hebrew. Hafra'at ishiyut gvulit. That's a literal translation. misga'eh b'pumbi, would publicly boast al cheshko on his lust, lavo al imo, to have a relationship with his mother, v'shememaleya estavasoa de isha cheres mevugeres, and he has some of his mother's age, so he can fulfill this crazy lust. Misha sovel b'machalaha now, whoever suffers from this terrible disease, doresh dvorim zorim me'acherim, asks crazy things from others, ukshalom etzaitim, and when they don't listen to him, ko'es mod, gets very, very angry. Lo misnai kan shechevra normalian, he does not conduct himself as normal members of society. V'yesh sheniya sichoti, I learned in this discussion, what does it mean borderline? Borderline doesn't mean that he's either hip, it's on the border of normal or abnormal. That's not what it means. He's on the border of neurotic and psychotic. Sometimes he's only neurotic, which is bad enough, but psychotic means he's delusional. He doesn't understand the reality as you and I see it. That's what it means. And he yochel etfosa metzius kamo shehi, delusional. And that's why it's so impossible to live with this guy. Because right now he may not be psychotic, and he looks like he's a pretty decent fellow. When he goes that border, which happens intermittently, he's a monster. A monster. He's delusional. He doesn't know what's going on. Ha'isha Haida, the woman testified. Shem Hoysa Yodas Kolzeh, if she would known this before, Lo Hoysa Nises Lo, she would never have married him. For Omnam, and in truth, Baruch HaMiyad, Shenodolo, she ran away immediately. V'nira, here's what I'm adding. She'av Shebizman HaNisuin, Lo Hoysa Psichoti. Let's say so when they got married, at that point he was on the other, he was on the right side of the board. He was only neurotic, not psychotic. Mikomakom. Mikevon She'soval Mimachlo, since he suffered then from the disease, she'alulah lahavi lematzav kazeh, she'nichol lichyos imo, it's going to lead to a situation when she cannot be with him. Yesh lomar she'havi kiddush etos. My opinion, I'm saying, this is considered a kiddush etos and not married, notwithstanding the fact that the moment that she married him, he did not demonstrate any symptoms of this borderline personality disorder. My expert psychiatrist, there's one sitting here, was an internationally known expert psychologist who agreed with what I told you, the name of a different psychologist who lives in this community, who's not here tonight, is that this is a disease which exists and usually is found in a person from teenage, that's when it starts to develop, and once it's in him, he has no free will. That's going to be my main criteria. He has no free will to conduct himself like a mensch. He's delusional. The guy's delusional. He has no free will. He doesn't know what he's doing. Let's go on a little bit further. I brought a proof from Igros Moshe, Chelek Dalet. Right, we have two of our Moshe's Shumas we have already. One is impotent. Two, psychotic. The case of our Moshe was hospitalized in a military hospital. No one knew about it. I'll say. Here is a third case. Kenereb Mistapek, fascinating. Our Moshe wrote this Shumas before it became such a hot button issue. In Misha Shatuf B'Mishkav Zohar, someone who's homosexual, Oseke Mitam Rishus, is he an evil person? Vezer Kiddush Etos, and this would be considered enough to rise to the level of a null marriage, because she never would have married, had she known that. Sheshum Isha Lo Hoysa Misratze Esli Nose Laodam Menuval Umos Ubozu Kazeh. No woman would want to marry a man. It's hard to translate these three words. Menuval, anybody? Disgusting. Yeah. Maos, disgraceful. Bazui. Whatever. Another synonym. One second. Oh, is he doing it out of evil? Out of his own lust, which in other words he could curb, but he decides to act on these lusts anyway? Oh no! Mitam shtus. It's an illness. You know about the dispute in the world of psychology about this. Kolomar, shenimsa b'matzav sheyesh lo tava la'anashim v'lo l'nashim. He desires men and not women. Uki'ilu anus ayde tavazu, as if he's forced, because he's not wired normally. Now, let's assume this for the moment. Well, the feed sadzeh, this is just relevant to our discussion. Assuming for the moment that this proclivity is in the category of shtus, of an illness, and not in the category of what we call rishus of someone who's doing something bad. Says Rav Moshe, quote, "V'im bozemin in shtus me'acha shu shalo kiderech hateva." It's unnatural. It's not the natural way to do things. Watch this. Vadai hu mum. This is certainly a blemish. The kevan shu mitzad shtus, since he's unfortunately not normal in this sense, alul la'od shtusim. He can do other things which are not normal. What do you see from Rav Moshe? Harei dein tzarech shote gomor shaholech orum v'ibad mashen osim lo. You don't need to reach this higher level. The kamur and sarach shusimanish dus nikarbo b'shasa kiddushin. What's my proof? Alter aposkim. Itim shotem, itim cholim. He goes back and forth from sanity to insanity. Umner the muchach shalahoy sanisa slashin wouldn't have married him. Ukshayev shalahasi get yesh lahakla shen sarach get midin kiddushay tos. And therefore, even though the others disagree, as I mentioned before, Rav Henkin and others, b'shas hatzchak gadol, kibinu didan, can't get a get, ula yesh lahakol, maybe it could be lenient, v'tzarachi l'dina, and I asked this question to, was written to a man named Rabbi Avad Yosef Tolidano, who was a wonderful young Talmud Chacham, a grandson of the world famous and recently departed Rabbi Avad Yosef, and I asked him to give his decision, and what I really had in mind was to bring it to his grandfather, and his grandfather should rule that the marriage is null and void, and this way the woman can go free. I know that I can't do it, but he Rabbi Avadya certainly could do it. My friend Rabbi Avadya Yosef Toledano, who I've gotten to know fairly well, as a matter of fact, he even had a connection. He drove one of my family just now in Yerushalayim, because he unfortunately has a daughter who is blind. Needs a special school, and someone we knew in our family had to go from place to place. They drove him in the car, they started talking. So he's a real live human being with problems that he has. Everyone in our family has problems here and there. And he's a very wonderful man. He learns in the Kol, which is headed by Rav Usher Weiss. You know the name of Rav Usher Weiss? A very wonderful, he spoke out here once at this very spot. And he learns in that Kol, as I've gotten to know him over years. He went to his grandfather repeatedly, time and time again. Grandfather refused to agree with what I wrote. And Rabbi Avadya Yosef is known as being very lenient in these areas. He felt he couldn't do it. Now, whether he couldn't do it was based on information, misinformation. This Rabbi Toledano that I know, his father, the son-in-law of Rabbi Avadya Yosef, as Rabbi Mordechai Toledano, is a dayan in Tel Aviv. And he said, you know, he's dealt with these situations in the past. He doesn't think it quite rises to the level to be impossible to live with such a person. I went back to my psychiatrist here in Riverdale. He said, you can't live with such a person. You never know he's going to explode. You never know. And you can't reason with him. You can't reason with someone who's delusional. You just can't talk to him. You can't. Dr. Mann, who was an expert in the field, agreed with correctness.
Well, it's more problematic.
But there you go. So if Dr. Mann, who's certainly a Mekel, can't say it's problematic, you begin to understand where Rabbi Avadya Yosef is coming from. Yes, Michael?
Rav Moshe is talking about Shishun Isha. That's an objective standard.
Right.
Are you dropped down to a subjective sense, saying this woman here, she has a choice, she wouldn't marry this guy. Well, he's saying Shishun Isha could be any woman somewhere who's going to marry this guy.
Now, whenever we say any woman, you can always find one exception that just proves the rule. That no woman that we know, a regular woman, wouldn't want to marry a guy like this. I was trying to advocate strongly in this letter that no regular woman would want to marry a guy who, even though right now he may be okay, at any moment can explode, become psychotic. We have experts, as in a lot of experts are in the field. You can weigh in. Raise your hand. Don't be ashamed. If you want to weigh in on this topic, let me know. Let me be psychotic. They know what's going on. They can hit you, as was probably done in this case, and be violent or threaten to be violent. And it's a disaster. How can you be in such a marriage?
I think one of the issues here is that is the diagnosis, because borderline personality disorder is very unpleasant, and in and of itself may be sufficient grounds in some people's mind. But the thing that makes it so devastating sometimes is that it's associated with other illnesses, of which mood disorders and bipolar disorder are two prime examples. And the Israeli psychiatrist that's quoted here describe symptoms that are not classically associated with a borderline personality disorder, are more typical of the maybe a bipolar disorder. And so if Rav Avadia Yosef was told borderline personality disorder is the diagnosis, he may have seen this as a less severe illness. So it's really, it has a lot to do with understanding what the true facts are and how they're formulated and explained. And if the psak would be affected by a different presentation of the information, that would be a critical insight into the outcome of this case.
Okay, so perhaps next time I'll give you a brief summation of what you can look it up online. I put it on, was sent online, his response, and it's 14 pages. You can see if something he said. I was unsuccessful this time of bringing the psychiatrist with whom I consulted last time to come down, and he insisted to me, I know nothing about this, that he thinks that it's much more difficult to diagnose most other psychiatric diseases, such as bipolar, even schizophrenia, around a whole bunch. He told me, that borderline personality disorder is fairly easy to diagnose, so he told me, and he thinks that this diagnosis is a classical case. So there could be a disagreement among psychiatrists. It wouldn't be the first or last time. Yes, Moshe?
If this person was treatable with medication, but he goes through periods where he refuses his medicine, and that's when he becomes psychotic, would you feel differently?
Yes, because I will try to demonstrate, maybe perhaps next time a little bit more, that if a man has what we call in our language bechira chavshus, he has free will, even though he may have certain predispositions, but he can overcome those predispositions by his free will, and free will includes taking medicines, that's part of free will, then it does not necessarily rise to the level of a kedusha tos. If, however, this case, I was told that no medicine helps for this, and you simply don't, you have no free will if you're a psychotic, you don't know what's going on, So then I think that it might be kedusha tos. I didn't tell you the fourth case. There were four separate shuvas. The fourth is quite a fascinating case. The case is a man presented to be a Jewish person, a regular Jewish person, and they got married, and it turned out, she found out right after the wedding, that he may be Jewish from a Jewish mother, but he prays in a church. He's a practicing Christian. So Rav Moshe said, at that point in time, I don't know if it's the truth anymore today, after the Pew report, I don't know what's true anymore. But when Rav Moshe wrote it, he said, no Jewish woman would want to have a husband who belongs to the church, and therefore she didn't know about it, and she found out about it, and she left him. Then she also, that's the fourth case, where a get would not be required. Now you'll ask a question, you ask an obvious question here. That's the problem. You ask an obvious question. I just said a minute ago, whatever depends upon bechira chavshus, upon free will, is not necessarily something which can be used to nullify a marriage. He had certainly free will. He could say, well, no more child, go out daven and shul from now on. It's a matter of free will. So I think it's an excellent question. Excellent question. I believe the answer is as follows. Yes, free will exists. However, there's a tshuva by the Sridei Eish. You know what that was? Bechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the very famous postlik who lived first in Berlin, first in Slabodka, then in Berlin, and then in Switzerland, where he says, quoting a Gemara in Avodah Zarah with a Rashi, "Kol bo'eha lo yeshuvun." If a person reaches a certain level, what they call their minus, of heresy, and so Christianity certainly is included in that category, he's not coming back. This doesn't mean that you cannot come back. Doesn't mean that nobody comes back. What it means is the chances of coming back are very, very slim. And therefore, if the person chooses to come back, we do not say, he really wasn't so far. Look, the proof is he came back. No, that is a new development. At the time you married him, he was unfit for marriage. There's a new development. And this concept of a new development, it has a Talmudic precedent. I don't want to go late, but just a few minutes. The Talmudic precedent is the following case. A man marries a woman. She has no children, so he divorces her. She marries a second man, no children, divorces her. A third man, no children, divorces her. And now the question is, does she get a ksuba? Because it's clearly, that because I don't use the word fault, but the fact that there are no children is if she has three different husbands, it seems it's because she's not able to have children. Okay? So the question is, can she get a ksuba from the third husband? The whole story. Guess what? She married the fourth husband and has a child. Now she says, goes to the third husband, hey, the Bezdin said you have to give me a ksuba, give me my ksuba. Wait a minute, said the Gemara. Wait a minute. We tell her, this lady, shtikusayich yofa midiburayich. You're being quiet, it's better than you're speaking. Why? Because if indeed it was a mistaken divorce, he divorced her assuming that while she was infertile. She proved from the fourth husband she is fertile. He'll now say to her, you want your ksuba? The get is no good. And therefore you are now in an adulterous marriage and your child's a mamzer. Whoa. Ask the Gemara. Is it Gemara Yavama? Samache. Ask the Gemara. Ihi shaska. So she'll be quiet. She'll be muzzled. Anan mi shaskina. How can we be quiet? We should force a divorce and disqualify the child. The Gemara has a three-word answer. We say, Hashtahi debriyasa. No. At the moment that he divorced her, she was in fact infertile. Now, cure. I don't know. Something happened. A new thing happened. A new development. And therefore, the divorce is considered a legitimate divorce because at that time she was infertile. So, I'm giving the same case. The guy's in the church. He's in the church. Kol bo'el lo yeshuvim. The guy's in the church. The chances of him coming back are slim to nil. So therefore we can say that the marriage is no marriage. You'll say, oh, so therefore she'll walk around. She'll go marry somebody else without a get. And this is spider. He'll go come to the shtibel. Put on a strimal. And say, aha. So now there's this ex of mine who went to marry someone else because the rabbi said that I'm less than Koldahu, I'm a nobody because I was in the church. Now they went back to the shtibul, so the divorce is there, that she, therefore the marriage really is a marriage, and her second marriage is adulterous and child's a mamza. No one tell him? Hashtahu debriyasa. There's a new development. Because we had a right to assume at the time that kol bo'el lo yeshuvim. That is a assumption we're permitted to make, and that's what we do. My time is up. I did not have a chance to discuss so many of the other issues which are residual to this. So, Blineta, next time, we'll discuss a number of other issues related to such situations of potential shortcomings, which are similar to the four of Rav Moshe Feinstein. How far can we push the envelope? And the additional near theological issue, or whether Tavla Mase of Tandu is something which lasts forever and ever, or subject to change based on changes in society. Shavua Tov.